The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with. Even in 100,000 myriad kalpas, now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. To continue with the song that attests to the way. Whilst we are within that dream called life, the six realms of existence are all too clear. After awakening, the great universe of universes is completely empty of any substantiality. That dream called life, our everyday experience, our ordinary mind, that thinks that what we see and feel is the reality. The six realms of existence, there are various ways of understanding this, and one way is to think of them as the things that we go through every day. The realm of the hells, the intense suffering we create for ourselves and our own minds, whether through anger or fear or jealousy, whatever it may be. The realm of the hungry ghosts, wanting things, planning things, craving things we can't have, never satisfied. The realm of the animals, ignorance and sensuality, just thinking about physical pleasure, and also dullness, lack of focus, lack of direction. The realm of the asuras, fighting, struggling for power, even insisting on being right or getting our own way, is the realm of the asuras. The heavenly realms, temporary happiness, and even bliss, but this is not to last. It's just temporary, it ends, it's not the true contentment. The realm of human beings, our relationships, our day-to-day affairs, and our attachments, all the day-to-day things that we fill our minds with every day. And within the dream called life, all these states of mind seem very real to us. We can be completely enmeshed in their ups and downs, drowning in our feelings and sensations, in what we want and what we don't want, what we like, what we don't like, what we want, what we fear, and so on and so on. But even a moment of clarity and stillness can cause all of this to fall away or to fade for a little while. And as we awaken more, the great universe of universes is completely empty of any substantiality. There is nothing to attach ourselves to. It is all just the dream called life. We don't have to be enlightened and completely awakened in order to get a sense of this. We can turn towards it and open ourselves up to it and begin to understand, have a sense of the coming of the dawn. Just sit still in faith and let it clarify. Let awakening come naturally. Therein are no defilements or blessings, loss or gain. For within our original nature, serene and free of defiling passions, there is no need to raise questions or search for anything. And as the mirror of mind, which is covered with the dust of age-old ignorance, has not yet been wiped clear, now is the day to be scrupulous in our cleansing of it. No defilements or blessings, no judgment, no thought of I'm doing well, or I'm doing badly. I'm good, I'm bad. I've done something terrible. Something wonderful has happened to me. I'm training. I can't do it. None of this, no defilements or blessings, no loss or gain, no regrets, no reruns over the past, no acquiring anything, no losing anything. There is nothing to be lost, nothing to be gained. We have everything we need just as we are. For within our original nature, serene and free of defiling passions, sitting still within our original nature, which is serene and free of defiling passions, no matter what may be going on in our minds or in our lives, there is no need to raise questions or search for anything. Nothing is lacking, nothing is missing, nothing to search for, nothing lost, nothing gained. Everything is just as it is. And as a mirror of mind, which is covered with the dust of age-old ignorance, has not yet been wiped clear, now is the day to be scrupulous in our cleansing of it. We may be sitting still within our original nature, but we have not yet fully realized the truth. We have not yet awakened. We need to get to work. Train hard. Start now. Each day we start all over again. We know nothing. All we have is leftover ideas and opinions about what training is, our memories, our karma. Each day we start again. Each moment we start again. And both of these aspects are equally true. We have everything we need. We are completely filled with Buddha nature. Nothing is lacking. And we know nothing. We need to work hard. Both are equally true. We need to cleanse the mirror of our mind and wipe off the dust of age-old ignorance, ignorance which we have carried with us for ages past. This is the ignorance that fetters us, our apathy, our indifference, our fear, our despair, our attachments. Now is the day to be scrupulous in our cleansing of it. Now is the day, every moment. Who is beyond thought? Who beyond birth? If truly there is the unborn, then there is nothing, then there is not anything that is not born of it. Summon up your mechanical man, the one with the wooden head, and ask him how soon in his search for Buddhahood he will attain his goal through his kind of efforts. Who is beyond thought? Who beyond birth? We're all subject to birth and death. We all have thoughts go through the mind. These are not an impediment. They are just the way things are. A mechanical man with a wooden head is not subject to birth and death, and he has no thoughts. If not being subject to birth and death and having no thoughts were important, a wooden puppet would be doing better than we are. We train within birth and death, within our minds. Imperfect as all these conditions seem to be, they are the very conditions we need. It is said that the human realm is the one most suited to training and realizing the truth, because there is both suffering and joy. Suffering teaches us, birth and death teach us, and we can relinquish suffering and find joy. Let the four elements go free. Do not grasp after them. Acting from within your serene and defilement-free nature, take what you need of food and drink, for all your actions lack any permanence, are empty of any substantiality, and are nothing but the great, perfect, enlightened understanding of the Tathagata. Let the four elements go free. Do not grasp after them. The four elements are earth, water, fire, and wind. And in classical Indian thought, between them they comprise the whole of physical existence. They're not exactly what we think they are. They comprise all of the physical world. People, animals, plants, everything that is made up of matter. The earth represents everything that is solid, not just the earth itself, but everything solid, and it is a measure of hardness and softness. Water is everything that's liquid. its wet and fluid nature. Fire describes heat and also cold because it's a measure of temperature. And it also refers to growth and the ripening of things, the aging of things. Time is encompassed in this. Wind refers to movement, any kind of movement. And there's also space. All of the physical world and its attributes are encompassed within these four elements. Let the four elements go free. Do not grasp after them. Do not grasp after the physical world. Do not grasp after the body, after people, after things, possessions, houses, stuff. Let them go free. Let them come and go. They're impermanent. Don't pant after things. Don't get embroiled and worried about things. When you think about it, most of our concerns are about things, people, and the relationships between things and between people and between people and things. In fact, all our experience and all our thoughts and feelings, no matter how spiritual or how subtle or how theoretical we may imagine them to be, in the end, they're all based on the material world. Without the material world, there would be nothing to think about and no one to do the thinking. So to let the four elements go free is to let go of everything. All of these are different ways of telling us to let go of everything. Let go of the body, the five skandhas, the three poisons, all our greed, anger, and delusion, the four elements, all physical existence. All of these are different ways of describing it. Acting from within your serene and defilement-free nature, take what you need of food and drink. We still have a body. We still need to take care of it. We're subject to birth and death. But take what you need. Don't overdo it. If we do, we can't meditate properly. It's not a judgment, it's just a consequence. Acting from within our serene and defilement-free nature. In truth, our nature is always serene and free of defilement. No matter what we do, no matter what happens to us. And when we act from within this place, this serene and defilement-free nature, we know that this is so. For all your actions lack any permanence and are empty of any substantiality. This does not mean it doesn't matter what we do and we can therefore do what we like. We're always subject to the law of karma. We always do our very best to keep the precepts, no matter how far we go, how much we see. We're always subject to karma. But when we let the four elements go free, when we act from without, in our serene and defilement-free nature, we're naturally keeping the precepts. It would not occur to us to do otherwise. And we leave no wake behind us. We don't leave a mess of things undone that somebody else has to deal with. All our actions are impermanent, without substantiality, and are nothing but the great, perfect, enlightened understanding of the Tathagata. May we all aspire to this. Certainty bespeaks the true monk. Those who are given to disagreeing display signs of emotional commitments. The direct severing of the roots of karma is what a Buddha attests to with his seal. If you just pick at the leaves or search for the branches, I cannot help you. Certainty bespeaks the true monk. Those who are given to disagreeing display signs of emotional commitments. This makes me think of Reverend Master Jiyu. In 1976, she had her deep experience, which she wrote about in How to Grow a Lotus Blossom. And a number of her closest disciples got scared and left because she talked about what she was going through. And some people said she'd departed from true Buddhism, she was teaching something different, she was changing her teaching. Some people even said she'd gone crazy or thought she was losing something. And this made her really sad because she knew this was not so. She could not deny what she had seen and knew with certainty to be true. She could not turn her back on it. It didn't even occur to her to do so, because it would have been to turn her back on her true nature, on what she knew was the truth. Certainty bespeaks the true monk, the true being. Those who disagreed with her did so because they were afraid. Suddenly things had got a lot bigger. Reverend Master started talking about past lives, which she'd never done before, and in particular about what it takes to cleanse karma on a very deep level. She went through some very painful and difficult ordeals, and she came through them because she did not settle for second best, and she did not get stuck. She kept on going no matter what it took, and she kept true to what she knew. So for us, sometimes we find ourselves resisting the Dharma, what we know to be the truth, or what we know we should do because it's not comfortable. It means giving up something and we don't want to do it. We resist. We argue about it in our minds. And we try to convince ourselves that it really isn't important or necessary, that we're training just fine as we are, we don't need to do this. But when we feel that resistance and argument, there's a little chill of fear there. And that we should pay attention to, because it means there is something we do not want to give up. There is a self that is getting cold feet about it. It doesn't want to give it up because it's afraid. It may be something small, it may be something big. It may cause us a little uneasiness. That might cause a stark terror. Either way, we need to look at it, because there is fear there. And if we don't look at fear, we are driven by it. When we just look at it straightforwardly and without trying to evade anything or justify anything, as best we can, with kindness and compassion, then we can do something about it. We can see what we're afraid of, and we can see where the self is involved. No judgment, just seeing. What am I afraid of here? What is it? Just see that little shiver of fear. Ah, that's where it is. Okay, that's where the self is involved. And then we can work on letting go. That is how we help ourselves. You just pick at the leaves or search for the branches. I cannot help you. We can help ourselves. The direct severing of the roots of karma is what a Buddha attests to with his seal. If you just pick at the leaves or search for the branches, I cannot help you. The direct severing of the roots of karma, this is the working on the self. This self, and our belief in this self, is the root of karma. It's the fundamental delusion that creates all of our suffering. We can't just cut it off. It would be so nice if we could just slice it off and be done with it. It does not work that way. But we can see how this self arises over and over again, how it gives rise to the three poisons, greed, anger, and delusion, or ignorance. We can look at it with complete honesty, and we can let it go. This is how we sever the roots of karma. It's not a violent thing. It's not a slicing off. It's a letting go. Letting it abide, letting it go. Not pushing it away. Letting go. But we have to be really determined to see it clearly. If we're just picking at the leaves and searching for the branches, if we're making excuses for ourselves, or we distract ourselves from what we really need to do, it's not going to work. If you find yourself stuck in the leaves and branches and somehow not getting to the root, look at suffering. See where it arises, trace it back to the self. Where there is suffering, there is self. If you think you have no suffering, look harder. The whereabouts of the money pearl is beyond the ken of ordinary people. But you can find it for yourself within the Tathagata's treasure house, which is within your own being. Its wondrous spiritual functioning through your six senses will be both empty and not empty, and the halo of light of its manifestation will take forms and be beyond form. The money pearl, he talks about this a lot in this poem, sometimes called the wish-fulfilling gem, the truth, Buddha nature, the wisdom of Buddha. It's called the wish-fulfilling gem because our deepest wish is for the truth. We may be embroiled in our selfishness and our suffering. We may be stuck in the leaves and the branches. But our deepest wish is for the truth. We just get distracted and think that something else will make us happy or solve our problems. But don't settle for anything less than the truth. We all have the money pearl. We all have the truth within our own being. We train in order to realize this truth, to find the money pearl. Until then, we practice faith that we have it indeed within us, and we do our best to keep true to it, to keep turning towards it. Its wondrous spiritual functioning through your six senses will be both empty and not empty, and the halo of light of its manifestation will take forms and be beyond form. This wisdom of Buddha functions through our six senses, even when we don't fully realize it. We can allow it to function through us by entrusting ourselves to it, sitting still, turning towards this Buddha wisdom, keeping the precepts, trusting this wisdom, and acting from it as best we can, we manifest it. Training and enlightenment are one inseparable. When we train, we manifest our innate enlightenment. Just practice in faith. Just keep on the way. Purify your five types of vision associated with the physical, spiritual, wisdom, Dharma, and Buddha eye, and attain the five powers from your faith, zeal, mindfulness, meditation, and wise discernment, which destroy all hindrances. But it is only after you have attested to it for yourself that you will truly know how unfathomable it is. When looking at shapes in a mirror, it is not difficult to see what they are. But if you grasp at the moon in the water, how will you succeed in taking hold of it? Purify your five types of vision. The five types of vision are the different kinds of ways of seeing. Our physical, everyday vision that we use all the time. Spiritual vision, seeing things that some people don't see. It's not necessarily a measure of training. Sometimes it develops through training. Some people have it naturally, they're born with it. The wisdom eye, based on the Dharma, seeing with that wisdom. The Dharma eye, seeing the Buddha nature in ourselves and other beings. And the Buddha eye, seeing as a Buddha sees. To purify our vision, we just need to purify the heart. It's not something esoteric, some special thing. Just purify the heart. If we're looking with the eye of greed or ill will, we will not see what is really there. We will not see the heart of the person. We'll just see in terms of what we want or what we don't like about this person. We won't see clearly. We don't need to go looking for special types of vision. We just need to purify the heart, recognize the self, see the three poisons, and let them go. The five powers, not something esoteric or exotic, just daily practice, faith, zeal, mindfulness, meditation, and wise discernment. We talk about these things all the time. We constantly try to practice them. And we need to practice all of them as much as we can. They all take effort. Faith in the unborn undying. Faith in the Dharma, faith in our own training, that we can do it and we are doing it. Don't be put off by this word faith. It is not blind belief. It is the entrustment of ourselves to that which is greater than we are. Zeal, the desire to train, bodhicitta, the heart that seeks the way, and their constant effort to do it. The mindfulness, bringing the mind back to the present moment, no matter what we're doing, sitting, walking, standing, reclining, coming back. What am I doing right now? What is my mind doing? Over and over and over again, 1,000 times a day or more. Meditation, formal meditation, meditation in all activities, as much as we can, sitting still in the midst of all conditions. Mindfulness and meditation go together. Stillness, awareness. Wise discernment, seeing clearly. What is really going on here? What is good to do here? Seeing without the filters of the self. And through these, we learn to really see. These five powers destroy all the hindrances. The classic five listed by the Buddha are sensual desire, ill will, dullness and drowsiness, restlessness and remorse, and doubt. These are the things that get in the way, that distract us, that drag on us and slow us down. And faith, zeal, mindfulness, meditation, and wise discernment counteract these hindrances, help us to deal with them, to relinquish them, to find the true way. It's interesting that remorse is a hindrance. This is remorse that we won't let go of when we go over and over some mistake we made in the past and keep tormenting ourselves with it. True remorse is different. True remorse is when we see our mistakes and we resolve to change. This kind of remorse, when you keep on holding on to something, is a hindrance. Let it go, learn, move on. But it is only after you have attested to it for yourself that you will truly know how unfathomable it is. We have the money pearl. We have faith in it. We try to realize it and to live in accordance with it. And it is unfathomable. We have no idea how truly unfathomable it is, how vast the Dharma really is. Sometimes we get a sense of it. We just need to remember, I just see this tiny piece through my slender, hollow reed. We can only entrust ourselves to it, do our best to open up to it, and know that it is indeed unfathomable. Training is enlightenment, and we are not enlightened yet. We're bodhisattvas, new to training. When looking at shapes in a mirror, it is not difficult to see what they are. But if you grasp at the moon in the water, how will you succeed in taking hold of it? Looking at shapes in a mirror, the mirror of the mind, seeing things reflected in the mind, which is still. When the mind is still, we can see the shapes in the mirror, and it's not difficult to see what they are. The moon in the water is the reflection of the Buddha nature. Sometimes we can see it, but we can't grasp it. We may catch a glimpse of the Buddha nature, and then it's gone, or it seems to be gone. We can't hold on to it, but we know it is there. Even a little glimpse, we know it is there. We have faith in that. We trust that. We turn our heart towards that. Practice. Keep on going. Always acting on his own. Always walking on his own. The one who has realized it roams, as his predecessors did, the pathway to nirvana. His tune is an ancient one, his spirit pure, his temperament naturally elevated. Gaunt of countenance, sturdy of bone, he does not turn back to give others a second look. Always acting on his own, always walking on his own. We train together and we train alone. We are each responsible for our own training. We make our own choices. We have our own karma. We can help each other and we train alone. Some years ago, when somebody was coming to the abbey to become a monk, one of the seniors said to them, "The only time you will ever really be alone is when you are sitting on your seat in the meditation hall. When we meditate, we're alone. We have to fight our own battles, get through our own obstacles, purify our own karma. And we are not alone. There is help. The help of the Sangha, help of the Buddha, help of the Dharma. We are roaming the pathway to nirvana as our predecessors did. We are following in the footsteps of the Buddhas and ancestors. We are doing as they did, just the same training. For they in the past were as we are now, and we will be as they in the future. There is no difference. We're just like them. Just have faith in that. His tune is an ancient one, his spirit pure, his temperament naturally elevated. There is joy in training, even in the midst of difficulty and pain. Something in us is joyful and content. Even when in great sorrow or pain or fear or worry, deep in our heart, if we're training, something is joyful and content. Because the heart knows it is roaming the pathway to nirvana. It is doing that which is good to do. This is the best of the best. He does not turn back to give others a second look. This does not mean he doesn't care about other people. He's just not enmeshed in their training. Don't worry about other people's training. Just do your own. Don't compare yourself with other people. It is completely unrealistic. As we each have our own karma, we each have our own unique situation. We have no idea what it is like to be another person, no matter how close to them we may be. Don't try to judge, don't criticize, don't compare. Just train hard, with compassion for yourself and compassion for others. All beings are walking the path, no matter what it looks like to somebody else. Always acting on his own, always walking on his own. The one who has realized it roams, as his predecessors did, the pathway to nirvana. We are all roaming the pathway to nirvana. Do not doubt this. Do not doubt that joy in training, that pure heart, the mani pearl within us. Stay true to it. Keep on the way. Follow it. This is the best of the best. Homage to all the Buddhas in all worlds. Homage to all the Bodhisattvas in all worlds. Homage to the scripture of great wisdom.